breaking down the biggest stories, talking about what really matters, and bringing you the biggest forum to let your voice be heard. Now, broadcasting live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios at The Avenue, here's Steve Scafidi.
Hey, good morning, everybody. Welcome to the Thursday show, the 23rd day of March. I was going to say 22nd. 23rd day of March. Sailed into the weekend. Snow if you're in the Midwest. Nice and sunny and warm in Florida and Texas. And who knows what the heck's going on in California. I was listening to the radio yesterday. Not local radio, Sirius satellite radio. And I heard iconic broadcaster. Some people love him, some people hate him. Howard Stern. Talking about an issue that I hadn't really thought about. And then I realized that it was something that I had also done, or at least thought about, contemplated when I was in this situation. And I'll give you the simple synopsis. It was Howard's reaction to a story about a doctor who was like heavily tattooed, like the whole thing, the sleeves and the neck tattoos. And he essentially expressed his opinion that he wouldn't feel comfortable going to a doctor like that. It didn't give him a professional sense of duty, right? And I thought about this because I had a kind of a similar thing happen. I wasn't a doctor, but I was at the USPS postal office, and the person that was at the counter, and for lack of a better analogy, looked like they just got out of prison and they were very involved in the tattoo culture in prison. Get me? Hear me? Face tattoo, neck tattoo, tattoos up and down their arm. Short sleeve shirt. So I guess the question is this. Is it unfair to judge that person? The professionalism of somebody who chooses to get face tattoos, neck tattoos, and all the rest? Now, tattoos aren't unusual anymore. Matter of fact, it's more unusual to not have tattoos. I mean, there's suburban moms who look like they were Aztec warriors. The sleeves, ankle tattoos, feet tattoos. I mean, that ship has sailed. But it's an interesting time in our country because tattoos, I don't know, have never been more popular. Everyone has them. As I said, from suburban moms to postal workers, police officers. There used to be a time not that long ago, matter of fact, when I was in office, where they were not allowed to show their tattoos. Now, I run into law enforcement professionals all the time that have tattoos, and I really don't think much about it. But I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about extensive body art. Does that, in your mind, I'm just asking for your own opinion, not groupthink. We've got enough groupthink in this country. What your impression, what's your confidence? Let's say it's a doctor or dentist. What's your confidence that they are professionals? Do you make that assumption? Is that unfair? I'm leaning towards it's unfair, but I still have that predisposition to not at least look at it in a different way, right? You see a face tattoo, neck tattoo, and I'm sure there's still some jobs where that's a non-starter. You can't show up with that and expect to get unemployment here. I can also tell you that the culture has changed. Whether it's clerks, oil change workers, you will be, if you haven't done any of these things, and it's hard not to, you will be shocked at the number of tattoos on their arms, on their faces. It's become the thing. The other one that's kind of a corollary is people under 18 getting massive tattoos. I don't have a tattoo. My wife doesn't have a tattoo. Neither one of my daughters have tattoos. Just, I guess we're non-tattooers. That's a concept. 855-616-1620. I don't know if it casts a light on me or the person. I mean, once you have them, you pretty much have them. I know you can remove them, some of them now, and that's certainly probably a growing fad because I think it's Howard made the point yesterday. I mean, often tattoos are filled with regrets later on, especially the use of names, some imagery.
especially if it's hate-filled imagery. Someone does it when they're young, and then they realize the error of their ways, and at some point they have to like function in normal society, and probably not the best thing to have all these tattoos. I'm not anti-tattoo. I'm just asking about the judgments we make when we think about people that are heavily tattooed, face tattoos, neck tattoos. Whether that's fair, whether it says something about them, the tattoo question started when I was listening to Howard Stern yesterday. Then I realized I was doing some of this. For example, if I have a choice, and this is just me, between someone that looks like they just got out of prison and someone that doesn't, I'm probably going to choose the person that looks like they just didn't get out of prison. Just me. Now, in real life, real time, that could be a bad choice. Because having a tattoo doesn't necessarily mean anything about the person's work ethic, their morals, their belief system. None of that. It's just they like tattoos. 855-616-1620. The old National Bank talking text. And we'll get to some politics today as well. Tim joins us from Campbellsport, Wisconsin. Hey, Tim.
Steve, how are you? Love your show.
Thanks, man. What do you think?
Hey, so this morning I pulled a guy out of the ditch. He had a little SUV barely in the ditch where our roads up here are snowy. And I have a work truck with a plow on it. And I pulled over, put my lights on, and he got out of his vehicle and tattooed his head to toe. I mean, he was wearing all the garb. He had a big ponytail. And I wasn't judging him at any cost, but when I realized he had a backpack on, I started kind of looking at myself like, what am I doing here?
Right.
You know, this could be a little bit spooky. But I hooked up to him, pulled him out. He offered me money. I didn't judge him for having tattoos or anything else. I mean, he was a nice guy. And I figured, hey, he's just trying to go to work. That's what he was doing. He said, I've been sitting here for half an hour. No one's came by to help me.
Well, there you go. You're not judging him, but you were a good Samaritan at the same time. Yeah, I think it's all about first impression, right? If somebody comes fast charging out of a vehicle and they look like they just got out of prison, it might give me pause. I don't know. I would think twice.
Yeah. I would have jumped back in my truck and locked it, and then like, I'm out of here.
Yeah. Thanks for the call, Tim. I mean, that's real life, man. I want you to tell me what's the right answer here. It's one of those ones where I have a bias. For whatever reason, and certainly Howard Stern does too, because it was a big talking point for about an hour on his show about, in his case, a heavily tattooed doctor. Then he had an attorney call in who also was heavily tattooed, and he said, it's never gotten in the way. 855-616-1620, the old National Bank talking text line. Talking tattoos, but really more first impressions, the trust factor. Does it give you pause if you see someone that's like heavily tattooed face, neck, arms? Your chance to weigh in after this on WTMJ. Asking the tattoo question on this Thursday edition of the Steve's Committee Show. You can join us, 855-616-1620. The old National Bank talk and text line. I relate a story that I heard on Howard Stern yesterday, Sirius Satellite Radio, and I was nodding as I was listening. It's like, yeah, if my primary physician, he doesn't, but was covered head to toe in tattoos, I might feel a little uneasy. And that's a personal bias, because I know people that have tattoos that are not like that. A couple quick texts, and get the phone lines jamming up here. I would look for a different primary physician if that person was covered in body graffiti. From the 262, look at police officers today, all tatted up on arms, even neck. I think it looks unprofessional. Leanne from Racine, I'm 62 and have just one. If I'm calling for police or EMT or going to the post office, I couldn't care less about the person's body art. I only care if they can do their jobs, which is, I agree with Leon, that's the primary role, right? From the 414, I'm an engineer. I have tattoos, but they're hidden. If you have tattoos that are visible, you need to expect and respect that people will judge you. It's a natural thing for people to do. You bear the responsibility of being judged in a certain way, and you should know that when you get the tattoo. Some thoughts from the old National Bank. Talking text line. Keith joins us from Sheboygan. Welcome to the show, Keith. Happy Thursday.
Hi, Steve. I have to mimic some of the comments from that engineer. I worked in the public sector for most of my career. I had the opportunity to sit on interview boards for new hires. And I used to have these discussions with our younger employees, and they would invariably say, that's not fair that that people from your generation judge people with tattoos. And I would agree, it's not fair. But the truth of the matter is, it's the reality. And if you are interviewing for a job and there are white 50-year-old plus males sitting across the table from you, the reality is you may be judged. So I do think they bear some of the responsibility of, you know, you made that choice and you may be judged based on that. But the other observation I have is, and you've said this on your show, I don't have tattoos. I'm kind of feel like I'm in a minority now.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Probably 15, 20 years from now, everyone sitting across the table on the interview board is going to have a tattoo, and this judgment has gone away.
Yeah, thanks for the call, Keith. It's some excellent points there. Look, I understand the dynamic. Tattoos are very popular. As I said before, we have suburban moms who look like Aztec warriors, sleeves of tattoos, neck tattoos, legs. It's not uncommon to see entire backs tattooed, including high school students. And understand the bias question. People are biased for a lot of things, not just tattoos. How someone looks. Pretty versus plain. Funny versus more serious. These are all biases built into our receptors that say we will like this person or not like them. Now, you hope it's more than that, because if you're going for a job or you're recruiting somebody for a position, you would hope that you look at the entire body of work, the entire resume. But often it's that first impression. That's what we've been told forever. And the first impression that Howard Stern got, and probably me, when I see a U.S. postal worker who is, again, looks like he just got out of prison, it is somewhat disconcerting. I don't know what the right answer is here, and I'm not sure that there is one.
Morning, Steve. How are you?
I am good. What do you think about the tattoo situation?
So, a doctor or any kind of professional would give me pause. I don't have a tattoo. No one in my family has a tattoo, although my daughter has a tattoo, more than one, actually. You know, a postal worker or a cop, not as much pause. But a doctor or an executive of some kind, any kind of professional, when I say professional, I mean white-collar professional, it would give me pause. Ultimately, obviously, you don't want to judge somebody, but it's hard when you see that, especially if they have a sleeve, as you say. That's really hard for me to look past initially.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to say that it scares some people, but let's be honest. Sometimes it's a little bit scary. You know, somebody's got a big skull tattoo, and they're applying for a position in a grocery store. I don't know. If I was a hiring, you know, if I was hiring personnel, I don't know if I would want to hire that person, and that's probably not fair because they may be an incredible clerk or checkout person. Yeah. And I don't want to be
Absolutely,
that person.
Yeah.
But we have biases.
And especially, I guess, for me, as I was thinking about it, a lot of times you associate people with tattoos, especially like a lot, has been in prison. And I guess that's part of the bias for me is like when I see a lot of tattoos, that's what I wonder about, or if they were in a gang of some kind.
Right.
I guess that's where my bias comes from.
Yeah, thanks for the call, Mike. I guess I'm bringing this up because I'm concerned that I'm too judgmental. And again, someone who has no tattoos looking at someone that has a lot of tattoos. Let's try Susan one more time. Susan, do we have you?
Yes, I'm here.
All right.
Yes, I am here.
What do you think about the what do you think about the conversation?
Okay. Two things. One, I used to feel the same way as you did. And two, up until the time that my youngest son and his wife, both adults, got tattoos, and I was not okay with it, but, you know, you can't tell your adult son not to get a tattoo.
Sure.
And when I found the meaning and the sentimental attachment and symbolism and heartfelt things that went along with these tattoos, it's like, okay, you know, what I have nothing bad to say. I also, number two, took some kids, high school kids, on a service retreat, and the man who greeted us was tattooed from head to toe.
Okay.
And I immediately went, oh, wow, this is, you know, who is this guy and what's he like? And
right.
I was immediately had some perceptions. And when he did explain what all his tattoos meant, I seriously feel that after all of that, we all went, oh, I think I want a tattoo. So it's, I think we do judge the things that we don't know or are afraid of. And in this case, knowing more about why he did it, why he had these tattoos, was just, it was a deal breaker. We were like, okay. So now when I see people, I don't.
So it changed your perception. This. It changed the way you view them. And that's probably, awareness
absolutely.
Is probably part of it. Yeah, thanks for the call, Susan, and thanks for taking time to call. Look, I brought it up because I'm concerned that I'm prejudging, and I don't want to be that person. But I'm also being honest here. When I see that, there is a initial, I don't want to say shock, but it's like, wow, there's a lot going on there. And maybe that's a conversation starter. Maybe it's not. I guess my lesson would be on this one. Maybe this is that opportunity to say maybe the outside doesn't matter. And this is well beyond tattoos. Maybe it's actually finding out what the person's about. Now, here's the kicker, though. If a person is heavily tattooed and they are horrible at their job, that's going to work the other way for me and probably for anybody else they interact with. What the message, what that means for people with tattoos, I don't know. I guess do the right thing. We'll take a break. Lots more to get to. We'll do it after this on WTMJ. Talking tattoos. I'm not against tattoos. Some lot of texts are saying, why do you hate tattoos? I don't. I'm giving you my honest reaction when I see someone that's heavily tattooed, including face, neck, entire sleeves of their arms. I'm taken aback. Now, one of the texters says, once you have the conversation, once you get past that, it's actually a great conversation starter, as one of our callers said. Aaron from Greendale, instead of judging, ask the person with the tattoos what they mean. But here's the thing. Even that, you are now asking somebody about something personal. They may not want to talk about it, so that could be a conversation non-starter. There has to be a comfort zone here. All I'm saying is, and what I took away from the conversation I heard on Howard Stern yesterday was, there is some sort of a natural reaction to, especially in some highly professional jobs. Does it mean a doctor can do his work if he's got tattoos? Of course. And if you listen to the show, you know I'm a big fan of healthcare professionals. They do amazing work. And public safety, which until very recently did not allow the showing of personal branding tattoos. And those rules have changed. Just like up until recently, they couldn't, a lot of cops couldn't have, police officers couldn't have beards or mustaches. That has changed as well. Times are a-changing. I just wanted to share something that I heard and I think that's relevant, and it's all part of that greater conversation about communication back and forth between each of us and why we all need, including me, need to get better at it. Happy Thursday, everybody. Hope you're having a great day. I had a great day yesterday. So I'm going to get to my IQ conversation in a second here, but this is great listener IQ. So one of our great teammates here tells me I got someone dropped something off yesterday at the GKB offices upstairs, and I was trying to track it down, eventually found it, I think it was downstairs here where the studios are, and I open it up, and if you listen to the show, you know I've been talking a lot about my chance to see Bruce Springsteen for the first time in about two decades and how much I love the concert. And I got a thoughtful letter from a listener about the show. And I'm not going to read the letter, but it was very, very heartfelt. One of the reasons they love the show is, just paraphrasing, is the balance that we try to take. And as I've said over and over again, that is the unique qualifier of the show. As much as people love hyper-partisanship in this state, there's value in not playing in that arena, if you want to use a sports analogy. So I open up, that was the letter, and then I open up the actual gift, and it's a original pencil drawing of a very young Bruce Springsteen. It's an iconic picture that anybody who's followed Springsteen back into the early 70s, mid 70s, will recognize the picture. And I put it up on my Twitter page. You can find me at WTMJ Steve. Absolutely, like, breathtakingly awesome. And I want to thank listener Gary for taking the time to write the very thoughtful letter and for the gift. It's incredible. It's actually up on my fireplace mantle right now. I was blown away by it. I actually shared a picture with my wife who's out of town, and she goes, wow, it's stunning. And so just an example of something a listener did. And the other thing was, I got a great voicemail yesterday. We had talked on the show about World Down Syndrome Day. And one of the listeners left me actually left it for some of the higher ups in the company. And they got back to me. And I just loved the message. It was basically a thank you for talking about Down syndrome day in a different way. You know, I kind of laid out, you know, my thoughts about how much angst and energy we spent on the downside of Down syndrome instead of celebrating the coolness of the individuals, the amazing things they do. And the caller shared that she was happy about that. So two great examples of listeners really, really making my day brighter. So I want to thank both Gary and I forgot the woman's name. It might have been Sue. And I'm going to try to reach out to her over the weekend. Just thanks for being so nice. And as I've talked about this year, boy, we certainly need more positivity and more niceness in this world with all the negativity going on. So, which leads me to this question. It's my show poll today. I teased it during the break there. And it has to do with intelligence measured by IQ. So, as I said, if you look at what IQ levels have done in this country for like the last century, they've gone up every decade, basically. It's actually from 1932 to the 20th century, all over the world, actually. IQs raised probably 3 to 5 points per decade. It's actually called something called the Flynn effect. But there's a new study out looking at a U.S. sample. It measures roughly between 2006 and 2018 in five categories. And for the first time in a long time, every category but one had a negative growth, dropped. Actually, 3 out of 4 domains. What are those? Verbal reasoning, things like logic and vocabulary, matrix reasoning, visual problem solving, analogies, letter and number series, the computational stuff, the mathematics, all dropped for the first time in 100 years. Interestingly enough, the one that didn't drop of the four, 3D rotation, which is spatial reasoning. And I think there's reasons for that, which I'll get to in a second. That actually increased. So the headline in the great piece at studyfinds.org, one of the great website, if you've never checked it out, studyfinds.org. Are we growing more dumber? Americans' IQ scores drop in four categories. It's interesting that, to me, you see this every day. This isn't surprising. But what I'm really curious about is what you think the reason for that is. I'm going to hold off on giving you mine, but I want to hear your reasoning. Why do you think this is? Now, I'll just take a shot at the one that's increasing, the spatial. I think we're very visual now. We're certainly hands-on when it comes to video games, engaging with our fingers and our keyboards and our mouse, navigating the complex world of the internet. That might have something to do with it. 855-616-1620 is the old National Bank talk and text line. I have a theory on why it's going in the negative for the first time in a long time. Whether that means we're dumber or less intelligent, debatable. There's also some questions about methods of research, methods of testing. I think some of these are largely manufactured to excuse lower performance, my take. What do you think? 855-616-1620, the old National Bank talk and text line. Are we getting dumber, less intelligent, not smart? I'll answer it, but I'd love to hear what you think and why you think that's the case after this. Dumber, or maybe put it more nicely, ask me nicely, Jack Nicholson said. Are we less intelligent after 100 years of increasing IQ rates, scores? The trend has shifted down. 855-616-1620, the old National Bank talk and text line. From the 414, not dumber, less well-educated. Many schools don't keep the same standards that students had to meet in the past. Example, in many schools, everybody passes, because if not, the school's rating goes down. Yeah, I mean, that's certainly part of the equation, right? The other big difference, this is real life, and you may know this, you may not. My era, which is admittedly a while back, you took a test, you live with the grade. Now, in most school districts, you can keep retaking the test. One, to increase your pass-fail numbers. Two, to improve your score. All in the quest for higher scores, better performance, perhaps the quest for more money as well. That's from the 414. From the 920, life is a lot simpler now. Most people don't need to know all those things. All the answers are in our pocket. Technology. And I love that point because it makes me ask this question. Does technology make us smarter or dumber? Let's use the classic example. I think Carol talked about this last week or this week. The making change. You go to a store. Often a young clerk making change from a $20 bill when your item is $10.61. And if the computer or the register doesn't do it for them, they often have no clue what to give back. And I would argue that in many cases, this causes shrinkage or loss of funds for many of those retailers. Now, I want to indict young people, because certainly older people can do that as well. From the 414, reliance on computers, calculators, no one does it in their heads anymore. Yeah, technology plays into that. 414, and because they're not making sure kids are being taught the basics. This is big with me, and you know this if you listen. Reading, writing, and arithmetic. It does not matter. Here, now you got me fired up about education. It does not matter how many different courses you have, how many different paths you have, if they don't understand the basics, the core things they need to, one, graduate, two, live a higher value life when it comes to being able to pay their bills, raise a family, support a family. You don't get that part done, all the other stuff is just frills, and it makes no difference. Maybe it makes some educators feel better about their variety and their diversity of curriculum, but I don't care. You lose it if you don't teach them the basics. 262, I don't think we're getting dumber. We're just choosing not to apply ourselves or gain more knowledge. Perhaps. Let's go long distance to Orlando, Florida, which I'm sure is very nice today. Lamar joins us. Welcome to the show.
Hey, Steve. Thanks. And yes, Steve, it's nice. And yes, I must rub it in. It's encroaching a brisk 80 degrees.
Oh,
Steve.
That hurts my feelings, but go ahead.
So I do think we're getting dumber. I think that we're taking away the kids' ability and adults' ability to critically think. For one, if I want to know the answer to something, I can just Google it, right, instead of doing the work to find the answer. Mm-hmm. And with respect to certain views, I can find anything. If I'm a flat earther, I can literally find a news source by YouTube or social media that backs up that idea. And we push against things like math. We learn about algebra and trigonometry and stuff like that, and we think we're never going to use it. But what we don't understand is when you're doing math problems, it's actually teaching you to think and critically think and problem solve, and it's exercising parts of the brain. Yes, Steve, I read this crap, so pardon me, but we push against that idea. Like, the only thing we want to know is, how do I get through school and make some money? We don't teach ourselves to think anymore, and it's just making us dumber. And all of these news sources that give me my point of view and reinforces my point of view, whether right or wrong, it doesn't make me any smarter.
Yeah, I love the perspective, Lamar. Thanks for the long distance call. Thanks for the long distance listen. I always appreciate that. He's right, of course. I'm going to take a break. I'm going to give you one of the reasons that no one has mentioned yet. And it's both introspective and hopefully illuminating, because this is the sadness that I feel about the industry I work in. The mismatch messaging, the misinformation, the misguided attempt to lead with voice when in fact you're making us all dumber. That's after this. I started this half hour asking the question, are we dumber, less intelligent, to put it in a nicer context? IQ numbers going down after 100 plus years of going up. So I have a sort of a different take on it. And you have to look at the people who attract attention with their words and their voices, both on TV and radio. The last 30 or 40 years, we've seen the rise of partisan shows and networks. MSNBC on the left, Fox on the right, on TV, and certainly most major cities in the country have a left and a right-leaning station group or individual station, flagship station, leading station in the market that engage in this stuff. Where, well, let's use the network TV example. You catch network commentators on a supposed news network actually lying to their listeners. How do we know that? Because their own words indicted them, right? In a court case, this is what I feel about this on their show, completely the opposite opinion. And in some cases, like the Dominion case currently ongoing, caught in a lie, might be a big price tag associated with that lie. Yet, admittedly, in the case of Fox and the Dominion lawsuit, Fox is the number one network. Dominance. Now, what I hear from fans of that network, well, we get the truth that we're not hearing anywhere else. Well, is it the truth? Because I just proved to you that it's not. At least one example, it's not. And you can call, anybody can call themselves a news network, but is it really? We've seen the rise of advocacy journalism, journalists who think it's more important to advocate for one side or the other in the mistaken belief that there isn't value in hearing the other side. We see the rise of Facebook journalists, more conservative-leaning journalists now, and they call themselves journalists. They're not. They're really opinion commentators, but they like to call themselves journalists, so, you know, you be you. Where they use the what about argument. Well, what about what they're doing? The other side, they're not being fair, so why should we be fair? So all we get is an endless cycle of nonsense. And the ultimate thing, which someone actually said in this market, I tell my audience what they want to hear, not what they need to hear. That's dangerous and makes us dumber. Some people look at politics as the answer for everything. It's not. It's become a cesspool of attention-grabbing idiots, for the most part. There are still some real, honest elected officials. But a growing number of attention-grabbers who just like to make headlines, say stupid things, argue nonsense, engage in whataboutism, instead of answering a simple question about what this person or this party is doing. And the public, for the most part, has sucked it up, leading, my opinion, to a dumber populace. Less informed, more eager for nonsense, more eager for conspiracy theories. Look no further than good old vaccines, which for a long time have made this country's population healthier and safer. And now we have people actively, including the legislature in Wisconsin, including congressmen in Washington, D.C., actively pretending that vaccines don't work, overplaying the very minimal risk of vaccines, because again, nothing's perfect, at the detriment of our country's health and safety. That's an example, real life, a few examples of why we're getting dumber and less brain activity on the thinking side, probably a heck of a lot more brain activity on the consumption side, filling our brains with nonsense and garbage. But that's just my take, albeit a smart one. News is next.
Breaking down the biggest stories, talking about what really matters, and bringing you the biggest forum to let your voice be heard. Now, broadcasting live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios at The Avenue, here's Steve Scafidi.
Indeed, we are live from The Avenue Studios here in beautiful downtown Milwaukee. Hope it's nice where you are. Weather be damned, as I say. It is what it is. We can't change it. We can only deal with it and cope. as best we can. Best way to get a hold of the show, 855-616-1620, the old National Bank talk and text line. You can also, as many people do, email me at steve.scafidi, 2f1d at wtmd.com. And I, just a general comment about that. Great emails on a lot of different topics. Generally positive, which I appreciate. They don't have to be. It could be negative. I like feedback. I got thick skin. Done a lot of jobs that require that. Which brings me to a Wisconsin politics story. So, if you weren't paying attention last week, Doug LaFaud, who was just recently reelected as the Secretary of State in Wisconsin, announcing his retirement, 82 years old, has had the post for forever. He was the longest serving statewide elected official in the nation. Think about that for a second. 5 decades. And the other part of the story, of course, is Governor Tony Evers announced Friday, last Friday, he had appointed former state treasurer and friend of the show, Sarah Godlewski, who was occasionally filled in for Joseph Pecky on our Friday politics, Wisconsin politics segment. Sarah Godlewski was a candidate for U.S. Senate, dropped out of that race. Mandela Barnes ran and lost to U.S. incumbent senior Senator Ron Johnson. So she will serve out the rest of his term. And because it's Wisconsin politics, now this is controversial. State Senate Majority Leader Devin Lemahue characterized the appointments as denying, this is a direct quote, denying Wisconsinites the chance to choose one of their statewide elected office holders, and called on Evers to instead call a special election to replace Follett. Love Follett. This suggests, Lemahue said, a premeditated action to award the power of incumbency to a partisan ally. It's an insult to the voters of Wisconsin and our democratic process. Amy Loudenbeck, who unsuccessfully challenged LaFollette, also blasted the announcement. The 1.26 million people who voted for me during the November 2022 election should be outraged at the news that Secretary of State Doug LaFollette has stepped down after just 3 months being sworn in for yet another term after 40 years of doing nothing in that office, so much for political decorum. Now, to be fair, that office was stripped of most of its powers by a Republican-led legislature. To be fair, Amy Loudenbeck lost the race. To be fair, we have a democratically elected Democrat governor, Tony Evers. Anybody out there, you can raise your hand, I'll digitally see it. Think if Republicans weren't in that seat of governor, with the power they had in the legislature, if Doug LaFollette, who is 82, retires, leaves, for whatever reason, health or otherwise, and I'm not alluding to anything, I don't have any inside knowledge, that they wouldn't have done exactly the same thing. On what world are you living in if you don't think the answer is absolutely they would have done the right thing, the same thing? As much as Republican-led legislature doesn't like it, when a Democratic governor is elected, he has power. Just as this governor also needs to respect the power of the legislature. This is where the working together thing has to come about. Otherwise, we're just yelling back and forth, making insane statements. Amy Loudenbeck lost the race. Why would we hand her that position? This is the same group, by the way, that has denied hearings for gubernatorial appointments for commissions and committees for years. Because they don't like the appointees. Including on the very important DNR commission. So let's be real. Let's not be fake. Let's not be accusatory, because you would have done the same damn thing if you could have. And also don't think that if Amy Loudenbeck hadn't won that race and defeated Doug LaFollette, all those powers that were magically stripped away from that office would have all of a sudden flooded back in, including, by the way, control over our elections. And again, raise your hand in Radio Land if you don't think that was going to happen, because it would have. about as quick as you can snap your fingers. Look, I understand how politics work. I understand the retort, the snappy retort, the hit at the other side formula has worked well for both sides. No matter what race you're talking about, Senate, governor, congressman, or woman, state senator, assembly, it doesn't matter. That's the shallowness of the debate now. It's about that and not the substance. One of the main functions of Secretary of State, Sarah Godlewski, understands very well. Because you serve on the Board of Commissioners of Public Lands. She served on that board between 2019 and 2023. She probably is very qualified for that position. I'm pointing this out for one reason and one reason only. The hypocrisy that goes on in Wisconsin politics. When the Republican-led legislature wants a special session, they're urging the governor to do it. When the governor wants one, we don't have time. Gavel in, gavel out. Let's be honest. That's what happens. There's no magic here. There's no science. There's no law behind it. It's feeling the way you do about the other side. The public's not being served. Party is being served. I'm going to make another point about that, and it has to do with the Supreme Court race after the break. And I'm not cheerleading for one side or the other in this race. It's a hypothetical. What might happen if one of the candidates wins, and how it could actually improve this situation? Piqued your interest? We'll get to that after this. 10:17 on WTMJ on this Thursday morning. Coming up at 10:35, an interview with a state representative on a different important topic. We'll get to that in a bit. But right now we're talking about the appointments of former state treasurer Sarah Godlewski to the Secretary of State position. And all the political angst and anger about that appointment. From the 262 on the Old National Bank Talk and Text Line, you can join us as well. Regarding LaFollette's resignation, we should follow the state constitution. If that means the governor appoints the successor, so be it. Elections have consequences. This is one. Mr. Lemahue should stop whining and do his job. Well, I have to say I agree. You want to play politics? When politics is played against you, suck it up. Put the big boy pants on. You don't like it? How do you think the other side likes it? That points out the error of your ways. Because if you want to be all-knowing, all-important, winning in every argument, which is probably not a good strategy anymore, this is what's going to happen to you. Your actions have consequences. There is going to be pushback. There is going to be a response from the other side because you treated them, and this goes for both sides. Democrats had power in the state for a long time and abused it. No one side is all virtuous and all-knowing. That's the mistaken belief that has somehow been peddled in this market and elsewhere for too long. And we're smarter than that, or at least we should be. Now, this is a theoretical question, or proposition, I should say. And I have a caller I'll get to in a second. If, and I'm not advocating for one candidate or the other in this race. I've had both on the show number of times. Daniel Kelly, Janet Protasiewicz. If the liberal candidate wins, the backstop that is a conservative-leaning court in the state of Wisconsin goes away for this legislature. Some might argue it would force their hand, just like a Democratic governor winning re-election forced their hand. You see softening from people like Speaker Robin Voss on some issues that he would have never given in on before, i.e. abortion. Exceptions for incest and rape. Never would have seen that if the new governor had been a Republican. If the conservative lean in the Wisconsin Supreme Court goes away, that backstop goes away, and it forces the hand of the legislature, both sides, to actually debate, actually work together. And if your brain can't comprehend why that's important, then we have a much bigger problem. And in fact, you might be brainwashed. Charlie joins us from Greenbush. Welcome to the show, Charlie. Welcome.
Hey, good morning, Steve. How are you doing?
I am good. What do you think?
I was a trustee of a local community, and we didn't let politics play into the game. We got together. We did what we needed to do for the best outcome of our village. And it just disgusts me that our state legislators and federal at that same hut can't just get together and do what they know needs to be done and leave some of the party politics out of it.
You're a wise man, Charlie, and I appreciate the call. Yes! This should not be hard. Look, I get emails about this all the time. Well, don't you think one ideology, one political side might be right? Yeah, absolutely. On some things, they are right. For example, we should have a strict border policy. I lean towards conservatives on that because I think it's messing up our country. Easy call for me. Easy call. I also don't favor a lot of the things that Democrats want to do with more handouts. Or in the case of the current president, just deciding to pay off billions of dollars of student loan debt. Don't agree. Bad idea, my opinion. So certainly one side or the other could win the day with their argument. And I always used to tell people this when I was a local leader. If your argument is a good one, it should win the day. I could care less about what your politics are. Does it make sense? And Charlie makes a great point about local government. They can't play these stupid games. One, no one cares. And two, they have to get the work done. That's where the rubber meets the road. It's why I love local governments. A former vice president who is now president of the United States told me that's where all the heavy lifting is done. So much focus on state and national leaders, local leaders, impacting your tax bill directly, property tax bill, quality of life, what kind of city, village, town, county you're going to live in. We have allowed ourselves to be bankrupted intellectually, going back to my last topic, by morons, some who do what I do, and elected officials who strictly hand over everything to their party. And it's an infection. I've seen it happen. Local leaders go to a state responsibility, state job, state legislature, and they lose their ability to regulate, lose their ability to actually think through things and just go with the herd, the cult-like mentality of politics. In the extreme example, we have a former president who may be indicted, maybe not, but is stained by case after case, who on the measure of IQ, which I just talked about, I'm trying to think of how to say this in a nice way, would underperform the average American. That's the nicest way I can put that. And he was president of the United States. And with all of that stuff hanging over his head, is about to launch, if he hasn't already, if he's allowed to, another campaign for president, his third. When reasonable, rational adults, if they're listened to, most of who don't have radio talk shows or TV talk shows, know that this is insanity. You can cheer for whoever you want to. Politics is sport. I get it. We've had 40 years of this nonsense. How's it working out? The answer is not well. 855-616-1620, the old National Bank talk and text line. Whether the governor has the right to do it, whether the legislature thinks he should do something different, it's really not just that. The bigger point is, it points out the hypocrisy that happens every day in this state and others. The absence of logic, the absence of common sense, and the absence of an ability to see through your party affiliation and look at policy that makes sense. Happens every day, every week, every month, every year in local government. And for some reason, the switch gets flipped to the off position when those folks get to Madison or Washington, D.C. They become snarky people on Twitter, issuing press releases instead of actually working for the people. That's my take. What do you say? 855-616-1620. More after this. Never get tired about Wisconsin politics. It is frustrating, often futile, but we'll keep trying to push in the right direction. Denny joins us from one of my favorite places in the state, Waupaca. Hey, welcome to the show, Denny. Good morning.
Hey, Steve. I generally agree with you. I have 37 years in public, in village councils and school boards.
Thanks for your service,
I found
man.
A couple things. Yeah, thank you. Appreciate it. And I'm a veteran, too, so I've checked all the boxes.
But yes.
The idea is that the talent of the local boards, when I was on, and I'm 73 and I started on one of them when I was 24, the talent level has gone down and the ability to understand problems is not there. And these are good people. These aren't people trying to be evil or make bad decisions. Just I left a village that we had 3 years operating capital in the bank when I was the village president, had paid all our bills, paid cash. We're now broke.
So,
and our philosophy is we can't raise taxes.
Yes. So
we
as
have
somebody who's done it, why do you think that is, Denny?
In my neck of the woods, it's a very conservative area, and these are good people. I'm not saying they're bad people. Don't think that.
I agree with
but
you.
I think part of the reason for local politics is my really talented friends are working harder than ever to run their businesses and make a living. They used to do it in a 40-hour week. Now they're doing it in a 70-hour week, 60-hour week. And then there's so much of the personal animosity. I'm going to attack you. I have a very good friend that's a city president, and he continues to do a great job in another city, even though it costs him business in his local business.
Hmm.
And I think those things are starting we're paying a price for that.
Yeah, thanks for the call, Denny, and I appreciate that service, because that is not easy. Trust me, all those nights of meetings, listening to all of that, processing that information, and making the right call. It's never been harder. For the reasons he pointed out, and the fact that we can't seem to get past the politics. It's infected school boards, local city councils, village boards, nonpartisan has shifted to partisan. And I'll just ask this basic question. Has it made things better? And the answer, after 30 or 40 years of this nonsense is, this name-calling, finger-pointing, the answer is N-O, no. It hasn't. It's getting worse. And you just heard it from somebody who's actually lived a life, as I have. If you listen to the show, you know that both Jeff and I both talk about crime having real consequences for criminal activity. Well, there's a question on the ballots April 4th. Some of us who have already voted have answered those questions. But I thought it'd be a great idea to talk to somebody who really has say, part of the Wisconsin legislature. That representative is Cindy Duco, and she represents, I'm looking at it right now, Delafield, Pewaukee, Heartland, Conemaugh. Welcome to the show, Representative.
Thank you, Steve. I appreciate you having me on.
Absolutely. So there's a lot of debates about crime, especially here in southeastern Wisconsin. One of the ways that a lot of us feel we can deal with some of this stuff is to talk about bail. There's a constitutional amendment on the ballots. You also have in the legislature a trailer bill is the term you used. And it defines things like serious harm and violent crime, so the courts have an idea of what to do when they're deciding about bail. So I'm going to let you spell it out for the folks out there, what this means, what the ballot item suggests, and what the legislature is planning.
Sure, happy to do that, Steve. So what we're doing is we're changing the state constitution so that judges can take into account the dangerousness that someone is to the community and their past criminal violent convictions. So in order to do that, there are two questions. And I know questions on the ballot are always a little bit confusing.
Mm-hmm.
They're written by attorneys, and so as to why they're worded this way, I can't actually tell you that. But the first question deals with serious harm. Currently, serious harm means death or threat of death. When we're changing it, we added several other definitions of serious harm. It could be mental harm, physical harm, other things that are you consider dangerous and make someone be less likely to be let out on early bail. So the other second question has really to do with looking at the totality of the circumstances and their past criminal violent conviction. And that's the key here. And I've been working on this since 2017. And as I've traveled the state and talked to people all over, everyone assumes that judges already take that into account. And judges cannot. All they can look at when setting bail is what it will take to bring you back to court. So if you are a repeat drunk driver, and sometimes it can take 2-3 years for your case to work its way through the court,
mm-hmm.
and every time you get arrested, you come back to court, they can continue to let you out on signature bonds. This lets them look back and say, okay, maybe you've been convicted of drunk driving before. And one of the biggest problems is domestic abusers. They're 80% more likely to reoffend when they're let out. So you could go back and you could look. In the case of Daryl Brooks, he had several convictions for domestic abuse. And then running over his girlfriend, if they could have looked back at his past criminal convictions, they would have seen that he had been charged before and convicted of domestic abuse and then held him on a much higher bail and held him to a higher standard.
Do you think the Waukesha Parade tragedy was the catalyst for finally clarifying these things for judges and, frankly, for the public, because we're going to be asked to vote on this? I mean, did it take that to kind of wake people up that, look, we have some serious deficiencies here. We have violent criminals on the streets that maybe don't have to be.
Well, actually, I proposed this in 2017, and we just kind of ran out of time, to be honest. And I was actually working on bringing it back again before the Waukesha Parade happened. And we made a couple changes from the first one. And the change we made here is that they have to look at your past criminal violent convictions, not just your charges, because we want to make sure we protect it, that innocent people are not sitting in jail for no reason. So that was a change we made, which got everybody on board, and that let us move it forward. And I was actually working on the bill when the Christmas parade happened. So we pushed it out really pretty quick right after that, because I had it ready for prime time, to be honest with you. But that motivated the public to get behind it and say, this is kind of silly that we're not looking at someone's past criminal convictions. I mean, to me, it's just common sense that judges would have all the tools at their fingertips when they're making a decision on what to set for bail.
State Representative Cindy Duco, representing Delafield, Pewaukee, Heartland, and Oconomowoc, Waukesha County, basically, talking about the amendments or the question on the ballot. So these things are tricky. You mentioned at the outset the wording. So I'm on your side on this thing. I think this is the way that we need to go to protect our citizens, to have judges have the ability to limit some of the easy outs for some of these criminals. So what's the right answer on the questions from our point of view?
It's a yes on both of them.
Okay.
Question one deals with serious harm and just changing it so it means more than murder. I think that, you know, rape, abduction, things like that are then taken into account. And question two really lets the judges look back at your past criminal conviction. So they're really easy. It's the two yeses. I know that they can look confusing at times. If you sit down and actually look at it, we're basically just giving judges all the tools they need so they can make better decisions.
And the vote was a positive yesterday, right, in the assembly?
Yes, it was.
Okay, good.
And I will tell you, I have bipartisan support on this. I have talked to judges, district attorneys, police officers. Everybody says we need this. We needed this a long time ago. The law was changed back in 1980 that took this out, and it needed to get put back in. So this has got the support of the legal community and the police departments all across the state.
Yeah, it's interesting you made that point, because I was talking to some liberal friends of mine, and they were also on our side on this. So I think there's a growing understanding that this is something that we can do, the legislature can do, and hopefully the governor will sign off on. Representative, I just want to ask you a quick budget question. We know that process is starting to really get to the meat and the potatoes of the discussion. How do you think that's going to go?
We're going to look at a tax cut. I'll tell you that we took the governor's budget and set that aside, and we're working on our own. We know that we have an issue with shared revenue. We want to help our locals out, so we're going to look at that piece also. But we've got a $7 billion surplus, and that means we took more money than we should have from the taxpayers, and I want to make sure we give a good chunk of that back.
I love those words. Love hearing you say that. Thanks to Representative Cindy Duco. Keep up the good work. Thanks for jumping on.
Thanks, Steve. Anytime.
Absolutely. So I just wanted to clarify for people, this is one of those ones, you read those questions, those ballot questions, like, I don't even know what I'm supposed to say here. So I wanted a legislator, in this case, Representative Duco, to kind of lay it out there. I'm with her. I'm with the yeses on that item. 855-616-1620. If you have an opposite argument, love to hear it. We can discuss that and more after this. I will tell you, looking at the Old National Bank talk and text line in our conversation with Representative Duco on the ballot amendment question, this is one of those ones that, like, everybody says, yes, 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 yes. There's literally no one saying the opposite. And I told you before, I had some conversation with some liberal friends, and they're like, yeah, this makes sense. And if you don't think the Waukesha parade tragedy or other high-profile stories that we hear about in the course of election campaigns, both for governor and senator and now Wisconsin Supreme Court, you don't think those ads make a difference in that sense? I mean, most of them are silly and stupid, but it does inform us about what happens in some of these high-profile cases, or probably more appropriately, doesn't happen. One of the texters, Diane. This is what you're doing, Steve, bringing government to the people. And for all those people who say, oh, my God, all you talk about is how bad conservatives are. Pretty sure Cindy's a conservative. Pretty sure I just agreed with her. Because you know what? It's a common sense, logical approach to a real-life problem that all of us here, and probably where you are, face every day. That's not hard or heavy lifting. That's common sense. And when you have liberals agreeing with conservatives on this issue, that should tell you something. The power of a strong argument. We don't have enough of that. Now, somebody asked me, what's the opposite side of this? That financially some people can't afford bail. And we have tried to be, some people have tried to be social justice warriors and fixing society's problems by weakening our justice system. My words. And Jeff Wagner's been very consistent on this in the afternoon as well. This is not a hard question. The basic truth is, keeping violent offenders locked up means that violent offender can't kill their girlfriend or spouse, kill an innocent civilian, or cause mayhem on the streets of wherever you live. Locked up, can't do it. Let go for a, my argument would be an invalid reason, then they can destroy the fabric of our society and cause mayhem, which is what happened in the Waukesha parade tragedy. Those lives didn't need to be lost. Look, being a judge is not easy. I'm not saying it is. But sometimes the people do have power. People have rights, and they can make decisions that make it a little harder for someone who's trying to be a social justice warrior to let dangerous people out on the streets. Now, this doesn't come without a price tag, folks. It's not a wash, budget-wise. It will cost money to incarcerate people. But we certainly have to start thinking about how we're doing things in the state of Wisconsin or wherever you live. It is inexcusable that we are letting, in the case of reckless driving and dangerous driving, people under the age of 18 control our streets. And because of a revolving system of injustice, we just keep letting them do it. It is inexcusable that someone could have 100 tickets or citations and just simply be let go, only to offend again, never paying those tickets, which is a real-life story told by Steve Shamraz at our partners at TMJ4. It's inexcusable that someone should have 10 drunk driving convictions and should ever have access to a motor vehicle again. And yet here in Wisconsin, we let them do it. This proposal, this question, these ideas are a natural public reaction to a problem that's not getting fixed. It's not shocking. It's not surprising. It's the only way the public can say to the judges and the legislators and the criminals, no, this has got to stop. We're not letting this continue. That's actually leadership. That's why I had Representative Duco on the show. We need more of that, less of the nonsense, which I also talk about on this show. Quick break. Welcome, welcome, welcome as we wrap up the 10 o'clock hour on my three-hour extravaganza show. And remember, I haven't put in writing yet, but 3 hours of listening is required. Soon will be. Got to get the whole package. You get the flavor, the theme, the excitements, the education of the entire program. Just kidding. But if you want to listen for 3 hours, I wouldn't say no. So you ever hear the phrase, know your audience? I saw this story, Detroit News of all publications. Lovely city of Detroit, Michigan. Here's the headline. See if you have the same reaction I did. Domino's, the big pizza chain, 8-year foray into Italy ends in liquidation. How do you not see that coming? How do you make that mistake, Domino's? I've been to Italy twice in the last 3 years. They got plenty of good pizza. It's cheap. It's delicious. It's, by the way, way better than the pizza we get. And I know it's way better than Domino's. So apparently the company, the corporation, opened 29 Italian branches. The final one closing last summer. Began in 2015. Their kind of twist was like unusual American-style toppings. Like, and I don't eat either one of these. Well, maybe barbecue chicken. Pineapple. Get the pineapple off the pizza. No. I like pineapple sometimes. I don't want it on pizza. So the company has now liquidated. So all of those investors they had, 5% of their money back. That's it. How do you screw up that badly? Now, they're blaming it on the pandemic, which probably didn't help. And their answer, I guess, their response was, okay, we know this business. We can deal with this. We deliver pizza. We don't need a place to eat in our restaurant. We deliver. But what happened was, and this is, I guess, probably a positive for the other pizza providers in Italy. They said, you know what? We can do that. We've kind of focused in our restaurant. We can actually deliver. And they did. They have two companies, Deliveroo and Glovo, which basically drove Domino's out of the market. It's like sometimes you wonder, people just want to throw their money away on things. And I made this point a month ago when I came back from Europe, and Italy was one of the countries I visited. You don't even know how much better their food is. You could get a 2 euro slice of pizza, or maybe less than that, buck and a half euro. And it's absolutely amazing compared to what we get, which is usually trash, loaded with things that have no business being in our food. And tasting not even half as good as what you get over there. So Domino's, pizza, what are you thinking? Why are you wasting money? Now, there's a place for Domino's, and I know people like Domino's. Some people. But come on. Know your audience. All right. Every Thursday, we do a fun thing called That's What Steve Said. 5 actual clips from the show, 5 questions to see if 2 lucky contestants can pick what I actually said on a topic. And we have social media on the list today, and it's some politics, of course. I don't think there's any sports on today's. I need 2 contestants at 855-616-1620. What's at stake? Well, the glory of winning, That's What Steve Said, of course. Is there a certificate? I don't think so. There should be. But, as we do every week, Thursdays, 11:08, a chance to win a $30 gift card at the Mineshaft Restaurant in beautiful downtown Hartford. And oh, by the way, Thursdays, pizza, buy your first pizza, second one free. So your $30 goes a long way on Thursdays, I'm just saying. 855-616-1620, Old National Bank. Talk a text line. 2 callers, 2 contestants. That's what Steve said. After this, which is the news, you know where we're at. WTMJ.
It's time to talk about the topics that were big.
That's what she said. Ha, I don't get it.
It's time to talk about the topics that were hard.
That's what she said. Or he said.
It's time to talk about the topics that had us saying...
That's what she said.
It's time for...
That's what she said.
No, it's time for That's What Steve Said.
I just say it to lighten the tension when things sort of get hard.
Oh, yeah. Thank you, Steve Carell, for that fascinating, funny introduction. We are doing something we do every Thursday, 11:08. Thanks to the great folks at the Mine Shaft Restaurant in beautiful downtown Hartford. We have a big prize, $30 gift card. And as they say, every Thursday, buy one pizza, second pizza free. Come on! So you double, if you win, you double your money on top of that on Pizza Thursday. Beautiful downtown Hartford, by the way. All right, let's meet our contestants on this Thursday. Contestant number one, Mark from Elkhorn. Hi, Mark.
Hello, Steve.
Tell me in 30 seconds or less everything we need to know about Mark from Elkhorn.
Okay. Retired last year. Unfortunately, my wife passed away, and now I'm back to work part-time. I work part-time at a grocery store here in town.
Sorry to hear that, but I'm glad that you're on the show today. And I started working my career at a grocery store, Century Foods, many, many years ago. And you know what? I really liked it. I enjoyed that. I did that for 9 years throughout my high school and college years. Absolutely enjoyed it.
Uh-huh.
It was fun.
Great.
All right. Let's meet our second contestant from the awesome city of Green Bay, Wisconsin. Chris joins us. Hi, Chris.
Hey, how are you?
I am good. Tell us about Chris.
I sell extra equipment, and I'm currently in town on business.
Very nice. Very nice. X-ray equipment. I just was x-rayed. I had my chest x-rayed when I was having some coughing problems. Good news is, equipment worked fine. I don't know if you supplied it or not, but there was no problems. Everything was normal. So there you go. Little real-life implications of the work that you do. All right, gentlemen, five questions that could change your life. Five questions that come right directly from my program. I think most of them are from this week. Might have been one that carried over until last week, maybe Friday. And they have to do with topics that I talk about. Mark, you're going to be first up. For each question, there's three possible answers, so listen very carefully to each one. One of them is actually what I said on the topic, on the question, and then we'll play for you what I actually said on the show. Everybody cool with the rules?
Sure.
All right, Mark and Chris. Mark, you are first up. Question number one, this is a hot topic, the subject of patriotism and the Pledge of Allegiance. Made my show this week. Specifically a story where a school forced a student to say the pledge, despite a school district policy that said you weren't required to do that. What did I say about the story? Three possible answers. Only one is correct. A, we should live in a country where people want to say it, not a country where they should be forced to say it. B, every time I hear a story like this, I want to say to people, do you understand what the word freedom really means? Or C, I love that schools keep a tradition like this alive, but coercion is not the best way to get that message across. Mark, what is the right answer, A, B, or C?
I would say B.
Mark says B. Chris, what do you say?
D.
One more time.
D.
Is that C or B? I couldn't tell.
C as in cat.
There you go, C. All right, gentlemen. My real correct live audio answer will not make you both happy. Here we go. Can we stop arguing about this stuff? Wasting the time of principals and teachers and students. Wasting the time of courts. But this stuff has to stop. We are wasting our time and money on nonsense. We should live in a country where people want to say it, not a country where they should be forced to say it. Countries that force people to do things are not countries you want to live in. All right, gentlemen, slow start, the proverbial slow start. But Chris, you're up first on question number two. This one has to do with social media. Talked about it today a little bit. If you listen to the show, you know they talk a lot about social media and its role in our culture and our country. What was my reaction to a recent news story about an election-related post on Twitter? A, why anyone would look to social media platform for guidance on anything is beyond me. B, Twitter is the digital version of that loud guy sitting at the end of the bar. Too loud, too drunk, and unfortunately too dumb. Or C, Twitter is the kind of public forum, a marketplace of ideas, but there are rules in society. One of them is not interfering in our elections. What is the right answer, Chris?
A.
Chris says A. Mark, what say you?
I'm going to say A also.
All right. This is a slow start. Here's what I said. Twitter's kind of like the public forum standing on a soapbox in the park, right? For me, that's what it is, right? So if you have a thought about something or you're weighing in on something, someone else's opinion, that's kind of the marketplace of ideas. But that doesn't mean it's just like a free-for-all, as I quoted from the story that I read. There are rules in society. And one of them is not interfering with elections because you want your guy or girl to win. That's stupid. That's dumb. All right, so slow start for both of you, 0-2. Going to question number 3, Mark is now up first again. Question number 3 has to do with fake electors in Wisconsin, the alternate slate of electors. I talked about that this week. Aftermath, 2020 presidential election. What was my smart take on this? 3 possible answers, only one is correct. A, if a crime happened where individuals created a signed document that was not true, in my mind, that's a crime. B, if the argument is that they were protecting democracy with their actions, I would say they need to go back and read the state's election laws. Or C, on any other day, this is a disqualifying act. In our new political reality, it's just business as usual. What is the right answer? Mark.
A.
Mark says A. Chris, what do you say?
C. C as in cat.
All right. Mark will be happier than Chris. Let's hear it. My opinion is they broke the law, producing a fake document under the guise of the state capital of the state of Wisconsin. If a crime happened when individuals created and signed a document that was not true in an attempt to overturn elections or an election, presidential, in my mind, that's a crime. Can't say any better than that. All right. Mark has one correct answer. Chris, currently at nil, as they say, which takes us to question number 4. Chris is up first. Smartphones in schools, always a hot topic on this show and talk radio in general. Chris, 3 possible answers, only one is correct. Smartphones in schools were a topic of discussion this week on the show. And I talked about the significant role they play in disrupting our young people's lives and their education. 3 possible answers, only one is correct. Listen carefully. A, that ship has sailed. We're getting to the point where smartphones are just part of a student's backpack now, like pencils and notebooks. B, kids are saying our friends are dying. They are killing themselves. Maybe we need to go back after the tech companies who are providing these easy platforms for these things to take place. Or C, at the very least, limiting the exposure of technology in classrooms, especially social media, just makes too much sense, which is probably why we won't do anything. Chris, what's the right answer?
B.
Chris says B. Mark, what do you say?
I'm going to also say B.
Gentlemen, that is the right answer. Let's hear me say it. I don't want to be the grouchy old man, but on this one, I think adults, parents, school boards, school districts, even some kids and their peers are saying, our friends are dying. They're killing themselves. They're being bullied in ways we never imagined. Maybe, just maybe, we should go after the tech companies who are providing this easy platform for these things to take place here. That seems reasonable to me. Which brings us to question number 5. Mark is up 2-1. And Mark, you're first up on question number 5.
Okay.
It has to do with politics, a frequent topic of most radio talk shows. It's a common theme, as I said, of most shows, even mine. What did I say about the current state of affairs when it comes to political discourse, something I talked about earlier today? 3 possible answers, only one is correct. Mark is first up. A, people treat politics as a sport. Loud, abrasive talking heads have monopolized the conversation, and unfortunately, people blindly follow their lead. B, the public would be better served if as soon as a talking head mentioned politics, their radio immediately tuned to a music station. Or C, as hard as it is to understand, all this political debate and theater has made the public dumber, not smarter. Mark, what's the right answer?
I would say A.
Mark says A. Chris, what do you say?
I say C.
Mark says C. Chris says C, rather. Mark is going to walk this one off, but let's hear what I said. We have a problem in this state, and it's not unique to this state. We see it in Florida, Arizona, other states, where people treat politics as a sport. Their only concern is winning a race or winning control. Not what they do, never consideration of what the other side thinks, even when they have a better idea than your side. That's out the window. Because loud, abrasive, admittedly popular, talking heads, squawking heads, whatever term you want to use, have monopolized the political conversation, and unfortunately, people blindly follow their lead. Boom for Mark. 3 corrects. Challenging the all-time record of 4. Chris, thanks for playing. That's what Steve said. Safe travels, my friend. Mark, stay on the line. How you feeling, Mark? Good?
Feeling great, Steve. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks for being a loyal listener. And thanks to the Mind Chef Restaurant, the place to go for great food. And on Thursdays, great pizza. Buy your first one, second pizza free. And Mark has just won a $30 gift card to the Mind Chef Restaurant in beautiful downtown Hartford. Having fun on a Thursday edition. Well, this week is flying by. March is flying by. Here we are, the 23rd already. Only one more week plus a day left. Because, of course, there's 31 days in March. I think there are. Should have looked at the calendar before I said that. I've enjoyed the show today. Hopefully you have as well. Best way, always, this show, all shows, on WTMJ, 855-616-1620, the old National Bank talking text line. If I have a chance in the bottom of the hour news break, I might do a new feature where I read some email, just clips of emails, because I'm getting a lot of emails lately, because I give out my email, steve.scafidi2fs1d@wtmj.com, because there's some fascinating stuff on there. I love when people take the time. And as I said earlier, one of the best listener gifts I ever got, beautiful original pencil sketch of Bruce Springsteen when he was a young guy in the 70s, and a lovely letter from one of the fans of the show, and then a great voicemail. So I'm in a great mood this week, and hopefully you're having fun. And I appreciate the listens, however you find us over the air, online. Podcast, WTMJ.com. Go to our show page. All of our shows, all of our interviews, all right there for you. Easy. Or wherever you get podcasts, Apple, Spotify. We make it easy for you. And that's just not my show. It's all the shows. And I think at the last look, I was the number one podcast in WTMJ. So thank you, thank you, thank you for all that. At least the last time I looked. So you're finding us however you find your podcast. All right. I'm going to tee this one up. We might wrap it around the news. We'll see how it goes. Here's the headline. Michigan University hosting separate graduation celebrations based on race and sexuality. The subhead is, liberal colleges have embraced racially segregated affinity group graduation celebrations in recent years. Michigan College, the university is called Grand Valley State. It lists graduation ceremonies for black students, Asian students, Latinx students, a term, by the way, that most Hispanic Latin Americans don't use, Native American students, and LGBTQIA plus students next month. And then they also have a general commencement ceremony for all students. The college describes the special celebration, in this case, the Latinx, Latino AX students, as an opportunity to come together and acknowledge accomplishments in the spirit and traditions of culture. So why does this interest me? It is the sort of the opposite argument about separate but equal, right? So in order to be equal, we must separate. Follow the logic here. So much of what we talk about with conflict and tension in our culture, in our country, is based on race or differences. Some in the color of our skin, some in our faith, some in our gender, pick a category. Ethnicity. And we of course have seen the rise of organizations that separate, including networks, BET, for example. Now, I understand why these places, some people would say safe spaces, were created, because they weren't being treated fairly on the traditional existing white culture dominated networks. I get it. But an honest question, a fair question, I think, that all of us should ask about these kinds of things, where someone is separating people based on any of the categories I just laid out. Is this healthy? Is this good for us? Does it promote diversity, or does it work against diversity? I would argue it's doing the opposite of what most people would hope diversity is about, which is bringing people together and celebrating the differences, not making them separate but equal, but making them united and equal. And again, I didn't grow up in a vacuum. I understand why these things are happening. They were meant to heal a wound. And it's a simplistic argument that I typically won't make, but if a majority group decided to do something like this at any university or any organization, it would be soundly denounced. It would be a how dare you moment. I can do two things at the same time. I can think two things at the same time. I can understand the reasoning why some people think this is important. I can also understand the detrimental impact on our culture and our country by separating, by isolating, by, what do they always say in business? Siloing. It's not good. It's the worst thing you should be doing. And unfortunately, it's taking hold at colleges and universities across this country. Harvard also does this. Black students, Asian students, Latino students, LGBTQ students. Separate, but equal. There shouldn't be 5 or 6 or 7 or 8 different celebrations. There's one. You can still celebrate all those things within that one event. What message, and this is my question for you, what message are they sending here? Let's say you're in one of those groups. You want to be separated? I would think the answer would be no, if you live in the real world. Are we going to isolate ourselves from people that look differently or pray differently? We shouldn't. Some of the best conversations I've had in my life, best experiences in my life, were meeting and interacting with people who didn't look like me, didn't pray like me, in many cases didn't act like me. Variety, spice of life, all that. 855-616-1620. The debate continues. And as much as affirmative action and many of the programs put in place to rectify and resolve our issues with the lack of diversity, we are actually creating more separation, not less. I say that's the worst possible idea ever. What do you say after this? All right, get ready to rock Milwaukee. Dave Mason, that's him right there. And special guest, the Outlaws, coming to town May 18th, the beautiful Pabst Theater in Milwaukee, downtown Milwaukee to be specific. Let's go with caller number 90. No, just kidding. Caller number 8. So 855-616-1620 gets a chance to see Dave Mason, the Outlaws, great band. Those guys have been doing this stuff for like 40 or 50 years, so worth the price of admission. But you don't have to pay because you're going to get 2 free tickets at the beautiful Pabst Theater on May 18th, 7:30 p.m. I think is the show time. Caller number 8-855-616-1620. One more chance to win those tickets tomorrow. All right, let's go to the phone lines on our topic about separate but equal, different commencement ceremonies, different programs for different groups. I don't like it. Let's see what Rebecca from beautiful McHenry, Illinois has to say. Hi, Rebecca.
Hello there. Technically, at the moment, I'm in Crystal Lake.
Hey!
I'm actually from Burlington.
There you go. I used to live on Redwood Street in beautiful Crystal Lake.
Okay.
I love that community.
Too many 6:30 a.m. mornings at the Crystal Ice House just off 176 with my daughter, so...
Love it. Love it.
Yeah, lovely town.
All right, so what's your thoughts on separate but equal?
I thought that's what we were fighting against. By the same token, if somebody said to me, okay, it's your turn to give something up, no more pomp and circumstance, that's not our culture, I would feel sad, I would feel betrayed if somebody said I had to give that up. So I do understand where people saying, that's not me you're coming from. And I'm old enough that I graduated in the 70s. And at that point, people who had been marginalized, I think a lot of them took graduation in a traditional format as a, ha, I made you give it to me.
Right.
I don't want that either. What I sincerely wish is that we could find some way to do what happens at the Olympics. They come in, they're all separated by who they are, where they're from, and when they leave, they're all together. And I don't know what magic they have that we don't.
It's a great analogy. Thanks for the call, Rebecca. Yes. If you're actually, this is the same argument I've been making about politics, right? we choose the extreme instead of finding common sense compromise positions that can satisfy the most Americans or the most Wisconsinites or wherever you live. And the Olympics example that Rebecca just talked about is a classic one. Despite all the upheaval, all the nonsense, all the crazy, for the most part, these athletes come together. And oh, by the way, wearing different uniforms and yet compete together civilly, stand on the medals platforms civilly for the most part. You want to have some different acknowledgments during a general commencement ceremony? Go ahead. Maybe a percentage of the majority population of your campus, whatever it is, black or white, whatever. Maybe it's a faith group if it's a religious institution. Maybe they want to hear about some of the people that aren't just like them. They won't hear that if it's separate but equal. That's not how it's supposed to. Didn't work for schools. Shouldn't work for schools. Why would we put up with that when you're talking about commencement practice or any practice for that matter? It doesn't mean, by the way, it's to the Texas pushing back, you can't have young Republicans, young Democrats, African-American student presidents, groups, whatever. You can have all that. Celebrate the uniqueness. Maybe a faith-based group on campus. Nothing against that. But you have an opportunity as an educational institution to bring students together. And it's horrifying, my word, that in this day and age, this is our answer for this. And the reason I warn about this and bring it up is because this is not a great trend. It's a dangerous trend. You know, and I'm starting to see, because one of the things you have to do when you have a show like this, you have to read a lot, both online and elsewhere. And you have to, one, digest a lot, but two, you see the trends that are happening in this country. And there's more and more of this, which I think is actually contributing to more hates and more bitterness and tension between these groups. The fact that on a college campus, left or right, if it's a conservative institution, religious institution, faith-based, they can't have a liberal speaker? Of course they should. And vice versa. Liberal arts college? I don't care how conservative it is. Unless he's Hitler, he should be able to speak on the campus. Don't you want to know what people are talking about? Don't you want to be informed about what the other side says? The answers always should be yes to that. Lots of texts on this. You're welcome to join us, 855-616-1620. 414, celebrating graduation in traditional culture ways is beautiful and should happen after the whole student body graduates together. Missed opportunity to bring everyone together and create societal cohesion to separate, in my opinion. Yeah, brilliantly said, brilliantly stated. From the 262, I thought we were supposed to be one United States of America. But the way the current political situation is, we are definitely headed in a divided direction. I always hesitate to make this leap, but I'm going to. Because I think there is a dangerous element to all of this. And I hear it echoed in talk radio, talk TV, op-ed pieces about this separation. Well, maybe those folks should go live with people that agree with them. Division of the states. Secession from the United States of America. As if somehow that's going to be better. You don't think if you separated the states by political ideology or beliefs that there wouldn't be conflict zones where the two meet? What world are you living in? It's been a while since our civil war, but civil wars still happen all the time. And a current war is happening in Ukraine, between Ukraine and Russia, as we speak. We have become somewhat isolated from that because we fight drone wars. And we send military equipment at this moment, not men and women serving in the military, although they still serve around the country, thankfully. Somebody asked for my email address, steve.scafidi, 2F1D at WTMJ.com. Happy to give you that. Mitch from Sturgeon Bay. The Dilbert guy said the white people should stay away from black people, and he's canceled, and a black author advocates blacks should distance from whites, and she's lauded. Both these opinions are off the mark. Division is not good. Stop it with fear. with respectful interaction, we find out just how much alike we all are, and that's a good thing. It's a great point, Mitch. One of the things, and I know some people hate when I talk about my mayoral career, but if you don't know the story, if you're a new listener, we had a mass shooting shortly after I became mayor of the city. Sea Temple, Wisconsin, 2012, August 5th. And before that, members of the Sikh faith, which, by the way, is the fifth largest religion in the world, and I didn't know that then, and I do know it now. Most people never interacted with Sikhs. And my only interaction was, I think, at a council meeting or something before that. But what I learned meeting with those folks, and for the first 2 or 3 weeks after the shooting, we met with them every day. Representatives, young and old, elders, talking about what they needed to facilitate recovery as much as you can, or response. But what I learned, kind of the backstory, and I've told this story at speaking engagements around the country, and it's in my book, 6 Minutes in August, is that I learned pretty quickly that individuals in the temple who are of a completely different faith, most of them South Asian, from the Punjab area of India, had all the same issues that we had. They had the crazy uncles. They had the kids who were driving them nuts. They had business issues like we all have if we have businesses, and finding employees and dealing with bad customers and car issues, all exactly the same. Now, having those conversations, those initial conversations, led into that later conversation. But you won't have those conversations with other groups if you can't even handle gathering together for a commencement ceremony. And save the text. It's not about space, please. It's about lazy convenience where one group doesn't want to see or acknowledge the other. And that's just as bad coming from a white majority as it is coming from a black or otherwise minority. Make sense? A couple more texts before we go to break. Agree, you should listen to the preaching of Martin Luther King. Don't judge on basis of the color of the skin. 608, united we stand and divided we fall. Well put. Again, the reason you bring it up is because I think that's the sense I'm getting from you is you don't think either. This is a good idea. This is a good trend. It's the opposite. It's potentially dangerous, and it's dividing. Anybody out there, raise your hand, digitally speaking. Think we need more division in this country? Come on. Quick break. Congrats to Ken from Cudahy, a city I grew up in. He's our big winner of our fourth giveaway. Dave Mason and the Outlaws, not together, separate, but both performing at the Pabst Theater May 18th. Just go to their box office or their website for more information. And the Pabst Theater is beautiful, by the way. I've seen some shows there. It's a spectacular place to see music or comedy. To enjoy all of that experience at the Pabst is worth the price of admission. And my case, I'm giving it away for free to a pair of tickets. One more chance to do it sometime between 9 and noon tomorrow. Final pair of tickets. I want to revisit my show poll. Because if you haven't got it yet, there's been a theme to the show today, and that's intelligent conversation, civil discourse, understanding each other, just some of the themes built into the topics, which are always news specific on my show. They may not be, you know, here's what happened on the police blotter, but it's kind of the way I approach the show. Individual news stories that have a greater cultural context or societal context. That's the way I do the show. Others do it differently. So today's show poll, you can find it on Twitter at 620WTMJ or at WTMJSteve. In a recent study on intelligence, IQ scores fell in 4 out of 5 categories. And as I said earlier, after about a century of rising scores, like every decade, it was up like 6 points. Knowledge being stacked on knowledge, awareness, intelligence, exponentially growing over that century. Well, that's ticked back. And obviously things like the pandemic and other forces at play. I talked about hyperpartisanship, the influence of squawking heads, either on TV or radio, who don't necessarily spew facts, but spew nonsense because their political party's talking points want them to. Essentially a 3-hour, in some cases, commercial. So here's the choices that I gave you. No, tests are outdated. And talk about IQ tests. Are we getting dumber? No, tests are outdated. 12%. We almost have 250 votes already. Yes, dumb and dumber. A whopping 83.5%. That's a slam dunk, as they say. And I threw in for fun, what's an IQ score? Intelligent quotient. And some comments, which I'm going to sample right now. Kelly says, yes, I've been saying a lot lately. What happened to all the smart people? Indeed, where did they go? Where are they hiding? This texter says, or this tweeter says, schools are too interested in pushing social issues at the detriment of academics. Go back to focusing on the core of educational activities and stop pushing politics. There's truth in those words. Christian says, I see it in my younger coworkers. They let technology think for them. Whenever human intelligence is called for, they fail. Let's see. Somebody blames right-wing media. Okay. Danny says, we stop thinking for ourselves. Ding, ding, ding. Where's the bell? Yes. We're letting other people, other organizations, other entities, other parties make our decisions for us. Often, we know we're wrong in letting them do that, but we still let them do it anyway, which is especially confounding. Corey Camino says, we used to graduate high school and be productive members of society. Now we graduate and have 10 more years until adulthood. Also a ding, ding, ding moments. I said this yesterday. One of those little things that you don't think about the ramifications of until it actually, I think, shows up is the decision to allow young people to stay on their parents' insurance until they were 26. Reducing, by the way, the incentive for those kids to, one, graduate, get a full-time job, and the all-important move out of their house and pay their own bills. You just made it easier for kids to hang out for 4 more years or longer. And I've told you that the numbers don't lie. More kids staying, more young adults, I should say, because that's what they are, staying in their parents' households till the age of 29 or 30. That's not a recipe for success. Are we dumb and dumber? Yeah. Because until you experience life, live life, learn from it, pay your own bills, get a job, you're just a kid. You may not look like one, but you're acting like one. We'll see what Jeff's going to talk about after this.